From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
The Nebraska legislature is one step closer to banning dismemberment abortion. We'll share where things stand with this important pro-life bill and what steps are left to get it passed into law. Plus, hear what the United States Secretary of State had to say about abortion recently and why Planned Parenthood is suddenly removing the name of their founder from their Manhattan clinic. We'll get to all this and more on this week's Capitol Connection. As always, today we are broadcasting from the Nebraska Family Alliance studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol, where our state senators have just 7 working days left in this year's legislative session. So things are quickly coming to an end for our 2020 legislative session here in Nebraska. There's not a lot of time left, but the good news is the single most important bill that the legislature had the opportunity to address this year, LB 814, which would finally put an end to the practice of dismembering living preborn children. This bill, LB 814, has a very real opportunity to pass into law in the remaining 7 days that we have left. This is not only a critical piece of pro-life legislation, this is just about basic humanity. This is about how we treat the most vulnerable, and it says something about us as a society. Are we going to protect the lives of innocent children in the womb? And certainly, everyone should be able to agree that no living human being should be torn apart limb by limb. That's what we're talking about with this bill. And so here is where things stand right now. Last week, the legislature was finally able to get to a first-round debate on the bill. Previously, it was stuck in committee, and so the bill sponsor, Senator Geis, filed a poll motion, and the full legislature voted overwhelmingly. 30 senators out of 49 voted to bring this bill out of committee so it can be debated and voted on by the full legislature and have an opportunity to pass into law. And so this past week, we saw the first half of the first round debate, and it unsurprisingly was met with a filibuster by pro-abortion state senators. And so what that means is we now need 33 votes to pass this bill. When a filibuster happens, it raises the threshold for the number of votes you need from 25 up to 33. And also, it's important to note that the way this works, under a policy that has been implemented by the Speaker of the Legislature, who is in charge of setting the agenda for the legislature, the Speaker, when a bill is being filibustered, he allows it to be debated for 3 hours, and then they move on without taking a vote. And so at that point, the bill sponsor then has to go to the Speaker and show a vote count demonstrating that they have the 33 votes to pass the bill. And if they can do that, it gets rescheduled, and then they can have the remaining 3 hours of that first round debate culminating finally with a vote. So in other words, every single bill in Nebraska has to go through 3 rounds of voting. And when there is a filibuster, the first round debate gets split into two debates that happen at different times. So we had the first part of first round debate, and we hope to very soon this week have part two and get to a vote to whether or not that LB 814 will get advanced to the second round. So that's where things stand right now. We're in the middle of a filibuster, and we need 33 out of our 49 state senators to say, yes, we need to advance this bill, and there is no reason why our law should sanction the dismemberment of living children inside the womb. And here's what we know, and what everyone across Nebraska needs to know, that this is going to be very, very close, both in terms of the votes and in terms of the time left to get this done. However, again, the good news, there is a real opportunity and a real shot to get this done. We believe that we can get to those 33 votes or more, and that we know we still have the time to get it done. This bill has broad support from both sides of the aisle. This bill is on the verge of passing. This would be a huge, tremendous pro-life victory. And so we're making a final push to help get 814 across the finish line. If you have not already, please reach out and contact your state senator and urge them to vote yes and to support this critical piece of legislation. They absolutely need to hear from their constituents. If you're a senator, if you know that they're pro-life and have already voted in support of this bill, then please encourage them. Let them know that you're praying for them and how thankful you are for their pro-life vote. And I mean, the significance of this bill, it can't be understated. And it also can't be understated just how close the Nebraska legislature is to passing this law and abolishing this horrific procedure that is real. This is real. This is a real issue. This procedure of live dismemberment abortion happens every year in Nebraska, and we have a real piece of legislation that would put an end to it. And whether or not we allow this type of procedure to be done in our state will be decided by our representatives this upcoming week. This is a big moment, and we can't afford to just let it pass us by. You can find more information about LB 814 and about dismemberment abortion and how to contact your state senator at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And last week when we had this the first part of the round one debate on this bill, it was really encouraging to hear a large number of pro-life state senators rise to the occasion and really to draw on their own personal experiences and expertise to share why they are supporting LB 814 and that why we absolutely as a state need to put an end to this gruesome procedure. And one of the state senators who we heard from last week, who we had not heard speak on this bill before, is State Senator Tom Brewer. And Senator Brewer has one of the most remarkable life stories you'll ever hear. He is actually the first Native American state senator in the history of Nebraska, and he is also a decorated military veteran and a Purple Heart recipient. Nearly lost his life multiple times serving our country, and he has a remarkable story, and we have the utmost respect and appreciation for Senator Brewer. And he rose to speak in support of LB 814. And what he shared was so powerful and so gripping and so moving. It was a very remarkable and moving moment. So we wanted to share a clip of Senator Brewer and what he shared on the floor of the legislature last week in support of LB 814. This is Senator Tom Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. President. There is probably no topic that I would rather not come to the mic and speak on, because I don't feel qualified to really say a lot except to share what's in my heart, and then you guys decide whether it all fits. I will stand in support of LB 814, but the question is why, and I think that's what I need to share with you today. In the native language, there is no word for abortion, probably for obvious reasons. The loss of a baby was always considered a terrible thing within a tribe or village. But if I go back and I go to the district, and I do, I mean, Ergman and I maybe fight for who has the most conservative district, but I'm sure that mine is right there. So when I asked for a head count on how people were gonna weigh in on 814, I came out with 68 of my 37,900 that responded or that knew to respond, and one who said that they were opposed to it. So if I'm going to represent my district, that's kind of the numbers. But I think we also need to at some point take a deep breath and say, you know, what is this all about? Yeah, to a degree, I agree with Senator Hunt. We're going back and forth on a lot of issues. We're not going to solve property tax. There's a part of this body who's dead set on taking your money and giving it to someone else, and there's part of this body that wants to try and let you keep as much as they can. and they're diametrically opposed, and they're not going to give, and we're not going to get anything out of it. And more than likely, 720 will die, and we'll get no proper or any economic development. And whether it's politically correct or not, you have pro-life, and you have those that are pro-abortion. And that's the reality of our situation here. But just for a second, let me share this with you, because I said this before, and I'm still struggling with it. The first life that I took was on 12 December 2003, at about 2:14 in the morning. And the last life I took was on December 19, 2011, at 9:45 in the evening. Every life I took is a ghost that will haunt you the rest of your life. So I struggle with the idea, because this was the enemy of our country who was trying to kill me, and I still struggle with it. And now you're going to take a baby's life who's done nothing. He just was in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong situation, and then somehow justify that to the world. I struggle with it. In the next few days, I'll have my first grandchild. And so all this just doesn't make sense to me, and I struggle with it. So understand, I don't feel comfortable with the topic, but I support LB 814, and I'd like to give any time I have left to Senator Hildreth.
What an incredible reminder about the value of human life and about the truth about abortion. For Senator Brewer to highlight it and bring to the surface that in native language there isn't even a term for abortion, because it's always been a baby. It's a loss of human life. And you know, hearing from him, someone who has been shot at and shot at terrorists, it's just inconceivable that we would take an innocent child's life, and especially to take that child's life in such a gruesome and inhumane manner. The bottom line is that we can do better. We can do better, and we have to do better for both women and preborn children in our state. We can and we must do better than dismemberment abortion. And we also saw very recently that the Secretary of State for the United States, Mike Pompeo, said very matter-of-factly that there is simply no right to an abortion. While speaking at the Family Leader Summit in Iowa, which is hosted by our sister organization in Iowa, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo cited the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution in affirming that abortion quite simply isn't a human right and that it takes a human life. Secretary Pompeo said that our founders built our country on a commitment to essential, unalienable rights. That comes from these amazing documents, our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, and our nation's foreign policy must be grounded in those central understandings. And thank goodness we have a Secretary of State willing to stand up and speak truth on this, because various pro-abortion groups and lawmakers, both at home and abroad, are trying to cloak abortion on demand in the language of human rights, arguing that it's necessary for women to have reproductive freedom. And we hear these euphemisms that are used as just another word for abortion. And Mike Pompeo just flat out rejects that and says, no, abortion, quite simply, is not a human right. It takes a human life, and there is no right to take another person's life. And he went on to say that the current administration appreciates and knows that our rights come from God and not government. And it's essential that we have people like Secretary Pompeo, that we have those types of people in elected office who recognize that fundamental truth that our rights come from God and not government. And we see a great example of this because last week, in the United States House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats passed a bill funding abortion and furthering the LGBT agenda, not just in the United States, but worldwide. On Friday, July 24th, House Democrats voted to pass a budget bill which increases funding for abortions in foreign countries funds the World Health Organization, and funds the promotion of LGBT issues throughout the globe. The bill is H.R. 7608, or the State Foreign Operations, Agriculture, Rural Development, Interior, Environment, Military Construction, and Veteran Affairs Appropriations Act of 2021. And it comes with a price tag of more than $259 billion. And according to the official vote tally, this bill passed on a vote of 224 to 189. All 224 yes votes were from Democrat members of Congress, and 181 Republicans voted against this bill, along with 7 Democrats and 1 independent. So this bill flew right through the House with just extreme increases in funding, specifically for abortion and to promote the LGBT agenda. And now the bill must go to the United States Senate for senators to deliberate and consider the bill. And thankfully, I do not believe that that type of legislation and those funding designations will be allowed to go through. But you can see just the clash of worldviews and just the sharp divide among lawmakers on how they think about these issues and how it unfolds. And we're seeing this continue to happen more and more, both here locally and nationally and even internationally. This is why people of faith have to be alert and informed and engaged. We know that we are living in a time of such severe political polarization. And I think, unfortunately, that because of that, the toxic tone and the bitterly partisan nature of our political system, that oftentimes, and I think too often, discourages many people, including many Christians, from studying what the Bible says and what the Bible teaches about government and considering how faith should help inform one's view of politics. Christians are called to honor God in every area of our lives, every area, not just some, but all. And consequently, the good works of believers, therefore, they must include every area of life. And that must include politics, because politics, as dirty as it is, and as much as people can't stand it, politics is an area with massive, massive implications for Christian evangelism, for human flourishing, for the freedom to preach the gospel, and for the good of our neighbors. And so as Christians, we have many, many reasons to care about our government and the political process. And we see that throughout Scripture. Engaging in politics is not only unavoidable, it's also an opportunity to both honor God and to show love to our neighbors, because the decisions made by those serving in government have a substantial impact on people's lives. We also know that, in fact, government was God's idea, and Christians should engage with it in a way that is consistent with its God-ordained purpose. Government was established by God to punish evil and to reward good. And in fact, the Apostle Paul even reminds us and teaches us that those in positions of authority in government are actually, the way that Paul refers to them, as ministers of the Lord. And so in light of that, and in light of what the Bible teaches about government and how Christians are to engage with government and culture, we need to commit to praying for all who are in authority. And we need to commit to leveraging our influence to advance laws and policies and practices that contribute to the good and to the flourishing of our neighbors. God's word is the only ever-standing tower of truth and light in a constantly changing and dark world. So therefore, as believers, we should endeavor to engage both government and culture with timeless truths and biblical principles. And as followers of Christ, we have the privilege to impact government and culture for good, and we should do so with a joyful spirit, bearing light to the world like a city on a hill that cannot be hidden. That is the challenge, and that is our opportunity. That is why Nebraska Family Alliance exists, and we hope that you will partner with NFA in working to advance family, freedom, and life in our state. Lastly, before we close the show today, I saw this story come across my newsfeed, and I can't not talk about it because it's very interesting and pretty surprising, but frankly, long overdue. Recently, Planned Parenthood of Greater New York, one of Planned Parenthood's largest abortion affiliates, officially removed the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. They removed her name from their Manhattan clinic. And this was a pretty stunning development, since the organization has spent years ignoring and defending their founder, Margaret Sanger, and her work. And if you are not familiar with Margaret Sanger, she was a believer in eugenics, and that only certain people were worthy of having children. And specifically, she has said horrendous things, very racist and vile things about minorities and about African Americans. And she believed that abortion was a tool to help limit those populations of minority communities. And for years, I mean, really since Planned Parenthood's founding, and in recent years, they have worked tremendously hard to minimize the reality of their founder's philosophy. And apparently, after all these years, it seems like they are finally having to reckon with, and in the process of abandoning their founder and removing her name from one of their largest buildings, despite the years of defending her legacy as someone who fought for the rights of women. But really, she was fighting to help limit and exterminate populations of people who she believed were undesirable. And considered different groups of people of being unworthy of life or producing life, including individuals with disabilities and criminal records and other hereditary health problems. Margaret Sanger, her first birth control center was located in an immigrant area of Brooklyn, New York, populated with people from Eastern European countries. And her second was in the African-American neighborhood of Harlem. And frankly, it's surprising that it's taken Planned Parenthood as long as it has to try to distance themselves from Margaret Sanger and her beliefs and her views on race and eugenics. And so that's, I suppose, a good thing that they're distancing themselves from that. But the tragedy, the real tragedy in all of this, is that that vision and the beliefs of Margaret Sanger and her views on abortion is still being felt today. We know, for example, that in New York City, statistically, it is more likely that black babies will be aborted than born alive in a hospital. It's more likely that black babies will get aborted in New York City. And that is just so heartbreaking. And so wrong, as we continue to see the devastating effects that abortion has had on families and particularly minority populations in the United States. The abortion industry continues to this day to disproportionately harm minority communities. In 2017, almost 80% of abortion facilities were within 2 miles of minority neighborhoods. And black mothers continue to account for 38% of all abortions in the United States, even though they make up only 13% of the population. And that's according to the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. So clearly there is still so much work to be done, and we get the privilege to help bear light and to speak truth in a world that so desperately needs it. And if you want to stay up to date on the latest news impacting family and freedom and life and culture and government, and to learn how you can partner with Nebraska Family Alliance to defend life, religious freedom, and family values, visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. That's all the time that we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance. I'll be back next week with more information and updates, and we hope you'll tune in again. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.